In our study tonight, this chart or lesson sheet we started, it's lesson 52. It's a review over the whole book of material. And there was something in it that I want to correct in our answers. I think it's important to get our answers nailed down correctly. When we talked about the book of Galatians and to whom was each book or these books written, I think that we said Galatians. Well, that's true, but we want to note in the beginning of that book, it's addressed to the churches of Galatia. Galatia was a province, it was not a city. And so consequently, we want to nail that down, who this book was addressed to. And the rest of these, I think we have sufficiently talked about. But I want to begin here. Where had Timothy been left? We talk about Paul's first epistle to Timothy, even the second epistle as well. We need to know where Timothy was. Can somebody tell me? He was at Ephesus, that's right. And the way that you know that, and one of the things I have tried to emphasize to you is you're going to need to know the passages. In 1 Timothy chapter 3, no, 1 Timothy chapter 1, verse 3, Paul writes, "As I exhorted thee to tarry at Ephesus when I was going into Macedonia, that thou mightest charge certain men not to teach a different doctrine." And he elaborates on that. But that tells us where Timothy was. Timothy was in Ephesus. Now, the relevance of that becomes very important when you're studying the books of 1 and 2 Timothy, to know where he was. And also, as you're studying through the book of Acts, to know what some of the problems were there in the church at Ephesus. And it's also important to you to study the book of the Ephesians, to know who was there. And of course, Timothy, no doubt, being a good preacher, but you'll note that the church at Ephesus had some major, major problems. And we've talked about some of that. Titus, written to Titus. All right, but how do we know that? Where was Titus, by the way? All right, he was on the Isle of Crete. Titus chapter 1, verse 5. And the book of Philemon was written to? That's a tough one. Philemon. And, of course, where did he live? In Colossae. Yes, he lived in Colossae. And we can see the connection in Colossians chapter 4 and in verse 9 with the mention of Onesimus. Onesimus was the slave of Philemon, and Paul identifies that he's sending Onesimus back, and we know in Colossians chapter 4 and in verse 9, Onesimus was with Paul. The next question, where was Paul when he wrote the book? Now, we might say books as we talk about the prison epistles. What are, first of all, the prison epistles? Chris? Philippians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, and Philemon. Okay, those four books. Now, when we talk about Paul being in prison, we see on the board he was in Roman prison, and this was his first Roman imprisonment. We'll have more to say about that a bit later. The book of Hebrews, to whom was each of these books written? Hebrews. And that's a real tough one, too. That was written to Hebrews. And, of course, we want to identify that a little bit further. The Hebrews were Christians who had been converted from the background of the Jewish religion. And, of course, we want to raise the question, was there a specific place specified? Well, no. They were scattered abroad and subject to this epistle wherever they might have occasion to read it. Those who were Jews who had been converted to become Christians faced all kinds of persecutions and adversities, as you'll see in Hebrews chapter 10, beginning in verse 32, and the admonition to them is you keep holding on to that which you now have. If you go back under the law, you lose everything. Now, the book of James, who is it addressed to? James? Johnny, you want to help him out? Bruce? Okay, it was written to the 12 tribes or to Jewish Christians. And of course, when you're studying the book of James, one of the things that you want to remember about it, it is one of the most practical books in the New Testament. It deals with some very simple applications of Bible principles. When we think about the first epistle of Peter, who was to receive that? David. First Peter. Who was to receive First Peter? David? No. Juan? James? All right. Jewish Christians that were scattered about. Yes. All right. Where was Peter when he wrote this book? Now that's a good question. I want you to think carefully about it. Babylon. That's right. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 13. However, though there is a lack of really any other symbolic language in the book of 1 Peter, some have suggested that the Apostle Peter, as an elder of the church in Jerusalem, and we know that Babylon in Old Testament times was indeed used to describe the city of Jerusalem. Some have suspected that perhaps Peter was in Jerusalem writing to these brethren, Jewish Christians. But be that as it may, that's an open-ended debate, and you can just know that that's so and move on. Second Peter. Jenny? All right, again, Jewish Christians. Those of the dispersion. First, second, and third John. Who were to be the recipients of these? Now, yes.
How do you know that Second Peter's Jewish Christians?
Well, let's return to Second Peter. Let me see. Well, yes, that's true with most of these, but let me look here just a second. Well, Chris, I may have to give some more thought to that. I'm not finding what I'm looking for. Yes, which would be Christians, generally. Of course, the first epistle is written to those of the dispersion. We've already looked at that. I don't know, Chris. I'll have to think some more on that as far as the why of that. Somebody else have something additional? Sue? Well, it is true that Peter is reminding these people of things that he has already either written to them or talked to them about. Evidence of that, I think, is seen in verse 12, where he said, "I shall be ready always to put you in remembrance of these things." And again in verse 13, "I think it's right, as long as I'm in this tabernacle, to stir you up by putting you in remembrance." And then again in verse 15, "Yea, I will give diligence that at every time ye may be able, after my decease, to call these things to remembrance." So what you read is true. Peter's anticipating his death, and he wants to remind them of things that he has already taught them. Now, I'll have to search and verify whether or not this epistle was addressed to the same group of people that the first epistle is addressed to. That's probably a good conclusion. But he doesn't say that in the introduction of the book. So that I don't know. I'd have to address that. I'm not fresh on that.
Well, you said 1 John is written to children, but he expressed that my own children.
He does, and it's an interesting thing. As I was looking over this and preparing for tonight, I noticed the expression occurs a number of times. In 1 John chapter 2, verse 1, "My little children, these things write I unto you, that ye may not sin." And then again in chapter 2 and verse 13, he addresses them as little children. And then again in verse 18, little children, it is the last hour and so forth. So yes, he addresses them as little children. Now I'm not sure beyond that how far we can go to identify the recipients. Evidently he had a good relation or close relation with them. Yes, Chris?
Well, it's one lesson that says it's simply a term of affection by a teacher to his disciples.
Yeah, yeah. Not necessarily indicating their age, but the relationship that they have. Yeah, yeah. All right, 2 John. That's addressed to the elect lady, and that's an interesting terminology too. As you look in verse 1 of 2 John, the elder to the elect lady and her children, whom I love in truth, and not I only, but also all they that know the truth. Now there's the question of whether the expression, the elect lady, is identifying a particular church, or whether or not that expression is identifying a particular woman without giving her name. Some have speculated that this was addressed to a particular woman and brethren that were meeting in her house. Of course, that is speculation. I don't know that you could take the text and prove that, but some have said that. So all we do know is that it's addressed to the elect lady and her children. Now, 3 John is addressed to Gaius. And I don't know much more about Gaius. He's mentioned only a few times in the New Testament. But one of the things that we do want to note about Gaius is found in verse 2. He said, "Beloved, I pray that in all things thou mayest prosper and be in health, even as thy soul prospereth." What does that tell us about Gaius? He was right with the Lord. Just very simply put. John's desire is that physically he would be as well as he is spiritually. So he was right with the Lord. In verse 4, you want to notice this, "Greater joy have I none than this, to hear of my children walking in the truth." John had great occasion to rejoice, to know the life, the righteous life that Gaius was living. Now, to whom was the book of Jude written? It was written to those who were sanctified. And of course, it's not a very broad terminology, but those who are sanctified in Christ, and they're given the instruction to give diligence. The book of Revelation, to whom was it written? Come on now. All right, the seven churches of Asia Minor. Christians in the first century time, in the just a casual reading of the book, I know that sometimes we look at the book of Revelation as a very difficult book. And yes, there are some things in it that, as we say, make you scratch your head. But as we look at the book, we see that there is a common theme. And these first century Christians were being persecuted. Regardless of the dating of the book, we find that they were being persecuted. And the admonition of the book, the theme or the lesson of the book is that Christ and His church always is victorious. Now don't ever forget that. Two things generally, I guess, that I want you to remember about the book of Revelation. Now we're not going to start a study tonight of the book, but I do want you to notice two things. One is how the book begins and how the book ends. It's interesting to me to talk with people about the book of Revelation, and often talking with folks who have been members of the church for a very long time that just don't study it, don't read it, don't have any familiarity with it, because they think, well, it's written in signs and symbols, and so a lot of people start in the book of Matthew and study through to Jude, and then they go back to Matthew and start all over again, and they just ignore the book of Revelation. Well, it's here for a reason. God has preserved this for us so that it can be beneficial to us. But the two things that I want you to notice, number one, how the book begins and how the book ends. This is key to understanding the book. In verse 1, it said the revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave him to show unto his servants, even the things which must shortly come to pass. And then the last expression in verse 3, for the time is at hand. Now, what does that tell you about the substance of the book of Revelation? What's he writing about?
All right, something that's going to happen very, very close to the time that he's writing it. Now, if you'll notice at the conclusion of the book, in Revelation chapter 22, Revelation chapter 22, if you'll note beginning in verse 6, he said, "And he said unto me, these words are faithful and true, and the Lord, the God of the spirits of the prophets, sent his angel to show unto his servants things which must shortly come to pass." Now, how does the book begin, and how does the book end? All right, he's bookending all of this by talking about things which must shortly come to pass. Yes. Now, the second thing that I want you to remember about the book of Revelation is not a very difficult point, and if I can find where it is, it's in Revelation chapter 17, verse 14. I want you to remember the theme of the book. Now, with these two things, one is in a pretty good shape to begin to study. In Revelation 17, verse 14, the writer says, "These shall war against the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings. And they also shall overcome that are with him, called and chosen and faithful." Now, what's the writer writing about? Things that must shortly come to pass. That's true. That's the timeline. But what's he writing about? Victory. Sum it up in one word. Yes, he's writing about victory. God's people will be victorious. Where was John when he wrote the book?
Patmos.
That's right. Exiled on the Isle of Patmos. Short answer. I don't know that I can do this. Name the three promises to Abraham that we have followed all the way through the study. Now, you're going to also, you know ahead of time, want to know where this is recorded. Okay? Name the three promises to Abraham that we've studied. Who wants that one? That's foundational. So everybody in here has that. James?
You want it in order of fulfillment?
No, I want it in order that it was promised at this point.
Yeah, my mind's here to give you fulfillment. I'm in order of fulfillment right now.
I understand. You'll have to wait till the next question. In what order were they promised? Land, nation, and sea, yes. And James, tell me what order they were fulfilled. Land, nation, and sea. All right, Bruce, we're going to have to redo that. Okay, no, they were fulfilled, James. In what order?
They became a nation first, Exodus 19, verse 6.
Not yet. I don't want the passages yet.
This lure is going everywhere in the way. Can you get it in a spot by the logs?
I'm trying. All right, so the nation, they became a great nation, and then they were given the land, and then the seed promise. All right, Bruce, you're right. I was yanking your chain, I guess. Land, nation, and seed. Okay? Make them a great nation, the land promise, and to bless all families of the earth. Now, oops. Where's that found, James?
Well, it was first given.
All right, the three promises are given in not 15, so let's back that one out. That describes the land, but not the others. So when we look at the three times it was given, Genesis 12, now go. Genesis 22, 26, yes. And 28, yes. Now, Jenny, in which passages was those, or were those, more than one, promises made to Abraham? Uh-huh. 22, very good. All right, Johnny, as we look at 26, to whom were the promises made there? Yes. And Melissa, in 28, to Jacob. All right, that's right. Very good. And there we are on the board.
Short answers. Tell when each of the previous promises were fulfilled. Now, James, here you are. Tell me when the previous promises were fulfilled. First of all, we've got the order of fulfillment. They were made a great nation.
So we read that when God called them in Exodus 19, verse 6.
All right.
So after they were called a great nation, then they conquered the land. And I'm forgetting the verse numbers, but in Joshua 21 and Joshua 23, you read that all that God had promised them regarding that had come to pass.
Very good. Very good.
And then in Galatians 4 and verse 4, I believe we read the seed promise and many other places, but Galatians 4:4 calls Christ that seed.
All right. There's one other I want you to include in that. Galatians 3:16. In that context, we see the promise made in Galatians chapter 3, or it's cited. Let me find the verse. Galatians chapter 3, in verse 8. The Scripture, foreseeing that God would justify the Gentiles by faith, preached the gospel beforehand unto Abraham, saying, in thee shall all the nations be blessed. Now there's the quotation from Genesis 12, Genesis 22, and so forth. Now, dropping down to verse 16, the apostle is elaborating on that, and he said, now to Abraham were the promises, plural, spoken, and to his seed. He saith, not in the seeds as of many, but as of one, and to thy seed, which is Christ. Now that nails it for us, Galatians 3, verse 16. Now then, the one that you mentioned in Galatians 4, 4.
Well, also Acts 3, you can start about 1:4 and go to the end of the chapter, and you're getting, in different words, the same thing, but it doesn't matter. Abraham and the promise and all families of the earth will be blessed.
Exactly right.
It's in many.
Yes.
If you're going to preach the gospel, that's what you have to preach.
That's right. And if you're not clear, if you don't see the connection at this point between Acts 2 and Acts 3, please feel free to raise your hand and let's talk about that. Because it's crucial for us to see that Acts chapter 3 is the same outline being preached from Acts chapter 2. And so they're parallel in what is being expressed. And so when you talk about to you is the promise, and to your children, and to all that are far off, we see what's being promised, the remission of sins. And then when you read that same thing in Acts chapter 3 and see the explanation that Peter gives of it, as James has suggested, verses 24 through the end of the chapter, quotes that Old Testament prophecy made to Abraham, in thy seed shall all families of the earth be blessed, and then he defines it. As he says that our sins or our iniquities will be forgiven or remembered no more. And so we want the blotting out of our iniquities. Forgiveness of sins. Same thing in Acts chapter 2. So that's what we want to remember. Next question. What hope do the Jews have today? What hope do the Jews have today? Juan, you want to help me with that one?
Like the Jewish people today, like what hope do they have?
Yes.
To the hope that they understand that the promises have been fulfilled and they convert to Christianity.
Oh, yes, yes. You'll notice our passage here. For I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God to salvation for everyone who believes, for the Jew first, and also for the Greek. Same gospel preached to both. So whatever benefit now that is promised to the Greek, the Jew can benefit from as well, but he has to remember it comes through his obedience to the gospel. The Jew has no special privileges in being a Jew. None. Okay? So we need to understand that clearly. And then this question, I don't think you have this in your list of questions. Mick added that. Who is the Israel of God today? James?
Anyone who's a Christian.
That's right. Now these passages that we have on the board, again, I want you to be very familiar with them. In Galatians chapter 6, look at verse 16 and we'll see our terminology. Galatians chapter 6, verse 16. He said, "And as many as shall walk by this rule, peace be upon them and mercy, and upon the Israel of God." Now, quick review. What was it that troubled the Galatian churches? What were some teaching?
Circumcision.
That's right. And of course, this was creating all kinds of problems. And Paul wants to identify who is God's circumcised today. Is it the fellow who can trace his lineage back to Abraham? Chris? What he said? All right, those who are circumcised with a circumcision, not made with hands, those who have received the circumcision of Christ. And when is that? When you're baptized into Christ. That's why Paul said, "For ye are all children of God by faith in Christ. For as many of you as were baptized into Christ did put on Christ." And then he concludes, "No Jew, Gentile, bond free, male or female, for you're all one man in Christ. And if you're Christ, then are ye Abraham's seed, heirs according to promise." Now, that, of course, was to reconcile Jews and Gentiles. You're one. You have to do the same thing to become the Israel of God. Now, we didn't reference Romans chapter 3. I want to do that very briefly. Romans chapter 3, after all, these are brief answers, right? Romans chapter 3, look at verse 10. I want to begin that at verse 9. It says, "What then? Are we better than they? No, in no wise. For we were before laid to the charge, both Jews and Greeks, that they are all under sin. As it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one. There is none that understandeth. There is none that seeketh after God. They have all turned aside. They are together become unprofitable. There is none that doeth good, no, not so much as one." Now, you'll notice that Paul, in this context, he goes down through verse 18 with a host of Old Testament quotations. But all of these quotations emphasize that all are condemned by sin. And he comes to the conclusion of that in chapter 3 and in verse 23. Now, turn back, if you will, one chapter and look at Romans chapter 2, beginning in verse 28. Jews and Gentiles, all condemned because they are sinners. Now, in verse 28, "For he is not a Jew who is one outwardly, neither is that circumcision which is outward in the flesh. But he is a Jew who is one inwardly. And circumcision is that of the heart, in the spirit, not in the letter, whose praise is not of men, but of God." Now, today, who is God's Jew? The man who has been circumcised when he's baptized into Christ. And, of course, the Colossian letter in the second chapter, beginning about verse 12, describes that circumcision not made with hands and tells us when that occurs, when you're baptized into Christ. Okay? So that helps us to understand who God's Jew today is. Those are Christians. Short answer. All right? Now, in the beginning of our study, the first lesson, I believe, or the first review, we found that there was a list that you were to put in chronological order. Most of you still have your book. You still have that list. All right? This is the same list. And there's a purpose to giving you the same list, because sometimes we had difficulty at the beginning of this study getting these events in order, and we want to see if we can do better having studied 200 and how many? 235 lessons on this series of events. Number one, let's put them in order. Number one, Richard, go with it. Number one.
I'm going with creation.
You'll do it with creation. You're pretty sharp. Wong, number two. Number two. Number two. Pardon me? The flood. Yes. Okay, I didn't hear you. I'm sorry. That's speak up. When you get old, you can't hear very well. You know, Ecclesiastes tells us that. Number three. Jenny? the Tower of Babel. Mary, you want to try for number four? All right, Jared will. Come on, Jared. Number four. Let's put them in order. All right. The promises to Abraham, Noah. Let me see that. Number five. The plagues in Egypt. All right, we've got this first promise now in the developing stages. Tanya, I can see you back there. Number six, you have that one for me? No. Jackie, would you like to tell me number six?
The giving of the law, Moses.
The giving of the law, yes. Chris, number seven. All right, the conquest. And then Betty, just about to let you off the hook. The wandering. You got them in. See, I just went right over you. The wandering in the wilderness. All right, now Betty. Number eight, the conquest. And then Melissa, number nine, the period of the judges. Yes. Number ten, Bruce. Look again. Before divided, yeah. What'd you have? You had the United Kingdom. Okay, this is under the reign of Saul, David, and Solomon, and beginning Rehoboam.
Wrong word.
Wrong word, yes. Sue, number 11, can you help me?
Where did we just left off?
We left off with the United Kingdom. Now that gives you a real easy one. Divided kingdom, that's right. Okay. Mary Ann, Virgil, you want to jump in on this? Okay. David? Number 12. Okay, Assyrian captivity. Good. Number 13. Judy, you want to jump in on this? Chris? All right. The Babylonian captivity. Jonathan, number 14. That would be so. The return from captivity. James?
Well, you have years of biblical silence.
Yeah, you do. You have the, how long was it? 400 years. Biblical science. Rick, you thought I was going to miss you. You want to jump in here and tell me what's next? Number 16. Birth of Jesus. I had this passage. I meant to punch this button ahead of that. Amos chapter 8, verse 11, James, when we talk about that 400 years of biblical silence, Amos prophesies concerning a period of time where there's going to be a famine in the land. Not a famine of food and so forth, but a famine of the Word of God. That is, there would be a time when God would not communicate. And that's what we're looking at here during these 400 years of silence. Did I get you, Rick? Oh, okay. Diana, you want to tell me number, what is it, 17? No, we already got wandering in the wilderness. We're up to, what, the birth of Jesus, so we'll have to go with something after that. Need some help? Okay, Richard, you want to help her out just a little?
The establishment
of the church. And, of course, where do we read that? Yes, Jared? Oh, but you know where we read about that, don't you? Where is that? All right, Jenny?
Acts
2. Acts 2. Very good. All right, what's next on our list? Number 18. Chris? Up here at the front. All right, Paul's preaching journeys. And Richard, number 19.
Paul in prison in Rome.
Paul in prison in Rome. Sue, you didn't get a very hard one last time. You've got real difficult choice here. Number 20. We do. And then number 21, Noah.
Let me see.
How about that one? All right. Now, question. More serious note. Did you find it easier this time through than you have before? Just a little.
It'd be a lot easier if they put me in chronological order on the list.
Well, it would be, wouldn't it? Yeah, it sure would. Now, I want you to look at this map. Look at it real careful, because this represents the Roman Empire in the days of Christ, and you'll notice that the Roman Empire had control of the land, for the most part, around the Mediterranean Sea. Now, many of the places, if not all of them, are located somewhere on this map. Okay. Here is another map that I want you to look at. You're well familiar with this because this identifies Paul's third preaching tour. And not only does it identify the places where he went on his third tour, but there are enough places up here where you should be able to identify the first tour and the second tour. My point in putting this up here is to help you to be familiar with the location of these places before I asked you to identify them. Okay? Now, here is another map that doesn't have any lines on it, indicating Paul's third tour. Of course, we know that all of them started from Antioch. All right? Now then, Richard, what I intended to do Sunday morning, I have a little thing in my pocket. When I was younger and we used blackboards, you could ask the kid to go up to the blackboard and point at it or point at the map that was on the blackboard. But in a class like this, it's difficult to do that. So, being as Richard has the pointer, I'm going to ask Richard to point at all of them for the next several charts. Well, actually, no. I'm going to ask him, if he will, to point at one or two of them, and then he's going to pass that thing off to somebody else. Okay? Because I want to see how well you know where these places are. And you've studied this a number of times. You have it in your lesson book. You have it all filled out. You've thought about it several times. So we just should be able to pass the pointer from place to place, and we'll do fine. All right? Where's Rome, Richard?
Right up yonder. I think it's by that river right there.
All right, up there north of the Boot Hill. Yeah, okay.
Everything's north of the Boot Hill.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. All right, so that's got us nailed down on where Rome is. Where's Nineveh?
Right about there.
All right, right about there. Now, I want you to tell me the significance of that city, Nineveh. Why did we study about Nineveh?
The capital of the Assyrian Empire.
Capital of the Assyrian Empire, that's right. Juan, what prophet was sent to cry out against Nineveh? That would be Jonah, yes. And you can just pass that on to Jenny, if you would. Now, Jenny, can you tell me where Babylon is? All right, good. Right in that area. And Juan, you thought you were off the hook. Can you tell me where Jerusalem is? Yes, sir. Very good. Very good. Mary, you want to get in on this? Oh, you aren't here for all of it? All right. Jared back there in the back just can't wait to tell me where Antioch of Syria is. Antioch of Syria. All right, go. Yeah, right there. Good. Very good. Very good. He held that thing pretty still for or so far away. Antioch of Syria. Ephesus. Noah, tell me where Ephesus is located. Now just push the button. If you can work a power saw, you can push that button. if you'd pass that over to, what's her name back there? Latanya. Yeah. She's going to tell me where Corian is. Where's Corian? Oh, we need to come over just a little bit further west. A little further. Right, down, right, a little further down. That thing's hard to aim, isn't it? All right, it's in that part of Achaia. Yeah, right up there. There you go. Corian. It would be right in this area. Yeah. Okay, very good. Well, no, I had it up there. I was thinking it was across this waterway. But Corian is located right there. I'm sorry. And then Philippi. Where's Philippi?
Corinth is not located there.
Corinth is here, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right, I had it right. Our book missed that.
That's Athens.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Very good. Where's Philippi? Yeah. Excellent. And then where is Alexandria? Just pass it around there.
You want to show us where Alexandria is?
Diana? All right, Rick does. Where's Diana? Where's Diana? Where's Alexandria? Where is Alexandria? All right, good, good. And then James, can you tell me where Shushan is?
I have no idea.
Ah! All right, Johnny? Yes, it is.
Yes.
All right. Yes, it is.
Right around there.
All right. Very good. And then, where is Damascus?
No.
Who's next? Chris?
No, he's good.
Right. No. Down the. Right there. Now, question, James. You didn't know where Shushan is located on the map, but can you tell me the significance of Shushan? What is it? It was a very major city in its day. And you've read about it many times.
Was this something in Babylon back in the day?
Okay. Try Persia. You remember when we studied the book of Esther? We know that the Persian palace was located here at Shushan. You see that identified a number of times in the book of Esther.
No, I honestly didn't recall that.
Yeah, I had to look that up too. Don't feel bad. And then the Tigris River, David, please. The Tigris River. Okay, come on up a little. There you go. Right there. Okay, right there. Who's next? Judy, you want to do that? Bruce is right there beside you. All right. Tell me where the Euphrates is.
Euphrates?
No, no. No. You're going to have to go up in here. Yeah. Tigris and the Euphrates. All right, so that's the Euphrates. What would the other line be? That one. Tigris. All right, so you've got the Tigris north and the Euphrates south. All right, next, the Jordan River. Sue, where's the Jordan River? You'll have to aim careful with that one. Yeah, yeah, that's it exactly. Right there. Mary Ann, you or Virgil want to get in on this too? All right. Melissa, tell me where the Nile River is. That's it. Longest river. In fact, the Egyptians didn't know where it originated. And there's still some debate about that, depending on the rain or the snow levels. Okay. The Dead Sea. Chris? Yes, the Dead Sea. Can you tell me the elevation of it? Oh, yes, it's about 1,300 feet below sea level. Okay? Hey, Joe, how about the Red Sea? The Red Sea. Okay? Chris is going to point at that for us. The Red Sea. Okay? Right here's the red. And these are the gulfs. Yeah. All right, while you're right there, hand that back to Bruce.
All right.
Yeah, you get the Gulf of Suez. Where is that? Yeah, I don't see you on the map.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what all this is about.
Yeah, well, oh, right here. Here's the Red Sea, and the Gulf of Suez is right here. It's hard to hold that thing, I know. There you go. You got it. The Gulf of Suez. And then the Gulf of Aqaba. Sue? Okay, David? All right, David wants
to. David's pointing right at
it. Oh, he is, isn't he? All right. The Gulf of Aqaba, right there. Gulf of Suez over here. Gulf of Aqaba over here. And, of course, the Red Sea here. And the Mesopotamia. Sue, you can show me where the Mesopotamia is. All right. This whole sea is Mesopotamia. I was thinking Mediterranean. Mesopotamia is up in here. This is where Abraham was. Okay? That's right. Mesopotamia. And then Arabia. Juan, he's handy. Yeah, show me where Arabia is. Well, yeah. All right, we've got the Arabian Desert. Oh, yes. And then Egypt, Jenny? Yes. And then Asia Minor, Richard? Oh, Jerry, he's just wanting to do that.
Too late.
All right, well, we got that. Asia Minor. And Cyprus, one more, Richard. The Isle of Cyprus, yes. All right, very good.